The question we need to ask ourselves today is, who owns the media now? Who owns the way that our attitudes and our opinions and our thoughts about life are formed? And so those are questions that we need to ask ourselves, you know, who owns this? Why is this? What's this about? I think Rudyard Kipling, my five great serving men, you know, who, how, what, where, why? We're not asking those questions in journalism today. It worries me too much that I watch reporters ask very simple surface questions, which is almost like, are you having a nice day, Liz? Yes, I am having quite a nice day. Okay, next question.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
A very warm welcome. I'm Liz Gunn on Green Planet FM, and today I'm talking to Brian Bruce. Brian's Kiwi documentary maker and author, who's always filled me with hope. But what do I mean by that? Hope of what? Hope that our media in Aotearoa New Zealand has a higher purpose than its current predominant tendencies. You know the ones. The tendency of recycling official press releases and PR spin, and of downgrading the crucial role of investigative journalism in favour of much that is brain-numbing. Brian's work, well, it's the complete opposite of brain-numbing. It's brain-stimulating. It's exciting for many of us. It's thought-provoking. For me, he's a marriage of the intelligence of America's Bill Moyes, a journalist I had huge respect for when I first came into this profession. He has the penetration of Noam Chomsky, who willingly highlights what is not serving the greater cohesion and good in human society. And he also has, for me, the courage of a John Pilger. Pilger, whose visual, vivid, confronting storytelling gives perspectives not seen, perhaps even suppressed, on mainstream media. Of course, is that my quiet adulation of Brian's quality work is that that would be the last thing the man himself would seek. Adulation, even praise. He's happy to fade into the background each time one of his pieces hits the mark with the wider Kiwi populace. And hit the mark he does. Many of you will recognize his work in the long list of documentary and program titles, which I'll add to the written introduction for this interview on the webpage. Titles like Inside Child Poverty, which has been on mainstream media, rather unusually in New Zealand, or The Investigator, which was an 18-part cold case crime series for TVNZ, or how about Jesus, the Cold Case, which won awards in Australia and New York, as did Mind the Gap, a crucial TV3 Brian Bruce documentary on the social effects of the neoliberal economic revolution in New Zealand, which was the gold medal winner at the New York Festival's Television and Film Awards. And there are many, many other titles. That last piece, Mind the Gap, struck a very deep chord. It struck a deep chord with Kiwis who long to see more truth-telling rather than glossy fluff on our screens. Kiwis who, in spite of years of neoliberal governments of differing political colours, promulgating ideas of individualism, which is really at the core of neoliberalism, ideas of individualism over community, Kiwis who by and large still want to give a hand up to those of us not doing so well, those of us struggling, Kiwis who are still wanting to reflect the core values of care and community and connection that have traditionally made New Zealand special. With all these Kiwis, Brian's work has a very profound resonance. And now Brian Bruce has come up with a very important way in which we can experience those core values on our computer screens, a way in which we can tell each other what we're seeing, what's going on, what needs to be highlighted, and all without the editing out or dumbing down by some mainstream media bosses. It's a new platform. It's a platform that's going to serve Kiwis here and around the world. It's a platform called New Zealand Public TV, NZPTV. A very warm welcome Brian Bruce. Define it. I knew he wouldn't like all this praise. He's actually looking a little bit diffident. Let's get on to the subject matter. NZPTV, Brian. What was your vision
well,
for?
Well, thank you for inviting me this afternoon, Liz. And I didn't know you were going to do that because I'm quietly sitting here blushing. So that, there you go.
It's a lovely blush, Brian.
NZPTV. It's an independent channel for everybody. It's our place to do our thing. Kiwis, New Zealanders, Maori, whoever can put programs up onto the site. It has to be quality programs, quality made. We're not going to have people's, you know, home videos and things. But it is, in a way, it's like Photoshop. We've made something that says, what are you going to do with this? You can make things with this. You don't have to ask permission. The problem that we have, as I see, in our New Zealand media, is that you have to go through gateways. If you're a producer, you have to go through gateways of the commercial television channels who really are trying to assess your program on how big an audience can you bring to the commercial gaps. It's always been about that. And if you're good at that, then they'll buy your next program. It's not about how good your program is. It's about what kind of audience and how big will it be to get to the commercial gaps where we will sell that area to make money.
Now, actually, I want to raise a weakness right there, because if it's all about the advertising dollar and the commercial gaps and pushing an audience to big corporate advertisers or small companies, it becomes quite difficult to criticise something that a corporate's doing, doesn't it?
Well, they're going to self-edit. They're not going to take a program that is actually not going to fit well with their sponsors or the people that they're going to buy their spots. The other side of it is, and we tend to think of things like government-funded broadcasters as being somehow independent or more independent. The reality is that that's not true either, because you're not going to bite the hand that feeds you. If you get your money from whatever, then the piper calls the tune. So when I was having this idea came up about 3 years ago when I walked out of TVNZ one day, having been to explain to me that, you know, my program on health really was probably going to get lots of ratings and things. But really, we're not into the business of necessarily doing programs in the public good when they have to be, you know, commercial, because we might sell ourselves one day and all of that. I walked out of that building and thought, well, if these guys aren't going to do New Zealand public television, maybe I could. So I went home and I registered a company called New Zealand Public Television Limited. And it started from there. Then I talked with some friends and I said, look, if you were starting television today, you wouldn't do it in the way that the BBC told us how to do it all those years ago. And we wouldn't have to have big dishes and sky, you know, satellites and microwaves and all of that. And we wouldn't have to have large buildings that we paid rent for and all of that. How would we do it? And we'd use the web. And then how would we put our programs up? And when I went to talk to people who ran servers, they rubbed their hands with glee and said, oh, you want to be Netflix? And we're going to make lots of money out of you because you want to make Netflix. I said, no. No, we're a bus station. What do you mean at your bus station? Well, you'll come to us and we'll point you in the direction of a program that someone else is hosting on Vimeo or YouTube or whatever. And so we'll curate. One of the ways that we'll create content is that we'll curate New Zealand content from around the web, from the producers who have made them, from their websites, people who own the copyright. But also we'll make our own programs and we'll put them up on New Zealand Public Television Vimeo. And we'll point to that. So Vimeo will be hosting the programs. We won't be, but you'll come to us to get to them. And it's really trying to work out how could we make cost-effective television, and then how could we make it a people's channel that says, look, guys, Brian Bruce is, you know, you might see him doing the introduction, but it's not his channel. It's our channel. And you can make programs, and producers can come through us, I hope, eventually, because I've been to see New Zealand on the air and asked them, how many eyeballs a week do we have in order to pay for independent producers to be able to come through our door and be able to put their program up onto New Zealand Public Television? Couldn't tell me. This is new world for them. They don't know what the numbers are. And so we're going to educate them about what numbers there can be, because we do pretty well.
It's brilliant. I mean, we'll come back to this, but obviously the more eyeballs, we'll be pushing this theme in this interview for any listeners, the more eyeballs NZPTV has, the more power and sway you're going to have. So the more people who are listening now can tell their friends, can post about it, can look up the Facebook page, the more power this will have, and it's power for the people, a turanga waiwai in media circles. So we'll talk the nitty-gritty in a moment, but I do love a quote you have on your Facebook page. It's Socrates. The secret of change is to focus all of your energy not on fighting the old, but on building the new. It's always been something you've brought in your programs, isn't it? You don't spend copious amounts of time complaining. You always try to look at positive solutions overseas. Has that been something that's always motivated you in your work?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever made a program which goes, it's a problem. Look, it's really a terrible problem.
Yeah.
How much of a problem is this? Is this really bad? Thank you and good night. Where does that leave anybody? So what I tried to do is to go, it's a problem. How did we get to this problem? Let's unpack it a bit. What are some solutions? And if you look at my programs over the last 10 years or something, that's the construction. The construction is we begin with the problem, we unpack it, and then we look at what possible solutions there are. And I think that's maybe that's where the hope comes from, because I see that you don't want to leave people in a dark place. I mean, why are you making this program? When I made The Investigator, for example, every one of the cases I picked wasn't because it was gory or it was a particularly spectacular one or whatever.
These were the cold case crimes.
Yeah. They were because there was some element of the law that we really had to come to terms with. Whether had this person been identified correctly? What are the rules for identifying someone? In the Tamihere case, for example, Tamihere was identified in handcuffs outside a courtroom. And the defence said, hang on just a minute, that's not fair. These guys are saying, can you see anybody here who might have been up at Crosby's Clearing? Oh, I think the guy in the handcuffs might have been.
For people who don't remember, this was the murder of the two Swedish tourists. That's incredible, isn't it?
Well, but the High Court, and I think the Court of Appeal, but I could be wrong with that, said that that's fine. And so ever since then, I'm not holding out a candle for David Tamihere, because I think there are other things that point to his guilt. But this was one thing that was terribly wrong. But what was also important was that you and I now get the same justice as David Tamihere gets. So we can be identified as potentially being the person because we're wearing the handcuffs. Do you know what I mean? There were rules. And so it's important that when you're making a program, you're not just doing it because, well, crime rates, you know, and gory things rate. Why are you upsetting people and going through all of this misery again for the families that were involved with this for no good reason? And so you actually have to think. I encourage producers to think, why am I making this program and what is the purpose of it and what is the outcome I want to have from it?
And often it is, let's get people questioning, which this beautiful new platform can perform. And we will move to the platform itself. But if you are not familiar with Brian's work, I've just rewatched a program that I find absolutely absorbing and shown it to my 20-year-old as well. Who Owns New Zealand Now? I didn't mention that in the introduction. But that one is another one that is, it gives such an overview of what's happened in New Zealand. The personal touches you talk about growing up. Your father was a postman. Your mother was a factory worker. You had a state advances loan, a 5% deposit, and the government lent money at 3%. And this went on from the 30s to the 60s in a New Zealand that was deeply egalitarian.
We could do it today. The question we need to ask ourselves today is, who owns the media now? Who owns the way that our attitudes and our opinions and our thoughts about life are formed? And so those are questions that we need to ask ourselves, you know, who owns this? Why is this? What's this about? I think Rudyard Kipling, my five great serving men, you know, who, how, what, where, why? We're not asking those questions in journalism today. It worries me too much that I watch reporters ask very simple surface questions, which is almost like, are you having a nice day, Liz? Yes, I am having quite a nice day. Okay, next question.
You know, yes. Like, but also we allow so much that slips past. I remember coming back from Australia to New Zealand. It was the early days of John Key and watching Mike Hosking, who I used to work with, repeat in a sort of cant on his platforms that we were in a rock star economy. But I was seeing more and more poverty. I was seeing more and more people on the streets thinking, this wasn't the New Zealand I left when I went away 10 years ago. This feels untrue. But nobody questioning it.
It turns out that we're on a rock bottom economy.
Rock bottom economy. But it's been allowed to be perpetuated for 10 years. What do you think, Brian, has happened? Let's talk New Zealand and world media. What has happened to the free voice that is so essential, free press, if we want true democracy?
Well, I think the two are connected. I mean, you can't have a true democracy if people don't have a voice. I mean, that's the first thing. And good on Green Planet FM for doing this, because, you know, this is very important, you know. Let's go back to the beginning of the 20th century, when the total number of people that you could address at any one time was on a street corner through a megaphone. And by the end of the 20th century, you can address the whole world through the various media. And now with the internet, development of the internet, it's like you can reach places that don't even have broadcast facilities but have telephone lines. If you can control the means of talking to people, whether it's for your private end or for your government end, that's a lot of power. That is actually the means to accumulating power and collecting power. Now, what New Zealand Public Television does, I hope, is gives the power back to the people and says, you are in control of the stories. Now, we are at a different age in media now, where until probably about, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, the people who controlled the stories that you heard were the people who owned the means of distribution. They were the towers or the satellite dishes or whatever, and who controlled which stories you were allowed to hear through their editing system. Now, people sometimes, like executive producers, probably don't think that they're editing. They're just choosing what they think fits our brand. You know, what's our brand? You know, and our brand's entertainment, so I'm sorry, you can't have that, because your program doesn't fit in with the time slot that we have got. We're stripping time slots here because between 7.30 and 8.30, we're going to run kitchen programs, and if yours is not a kitchen program, you're not going to get in the slot here. That kind of thing.
Which, well, to me, is just reeks of dumbing down. It's a lack of variety. Nature doesn't have this uni kind of idea to it.
Well, Liz, we don't want people thinking. I mean, good grief, what will happen if people start thinking? You know, we might, where will this end?
Now you're starting to sound like Rupert Murdoch. And this is what's come through, particularly since the 80s, this idea of these few media barons who are, to me, like robber barons. They are controlling, they are manipulative, they are willing to lie.
They determine who's going to be your government and who isn't and all of that.
And it's horrifying. So we have to wake up. So this is a waking up.
This is a wake-up plan. So it's more than just a device. It's more than just a channel. It is, as we go through in the next few years, we will grow, but we'll grow as much as the people want to do it. Now, my call is out to independent producers, because this is a channel for independent producers. Our gateway is much wider than any of the public broadcasters or any of the private broadcasters. You can come to us with a program. This is our aim. You know, you can come to us with a program, provided that it is professionally made.
What does that mean, define that?
Well, it has to be something that you might see on a commercial station,
yes,
in terms of its quality of production. There's production values. We're not going to put up people's home videos. Mm. Or I was talking to, I held the camera up at a church meeting last week, and wouldn't you like to put it on the telly? No, but if you have made a program about the TPPA or the water issues or something like that, and you've done your homework, and I still want us to keep to the Broadcast Standards Authority issues of fairness and balance. You don't have to be balanced in a program. That's been established for a long time. If you look at my programs, people go, he's not balanced. He's just giving one side of the story.
If you look at any mainstream news, there's often a lack of balance now. So we can't really liberally throw that around, that accusation.
Look at any of the channels on Freeview in which Christian preachers are talking all the time. That's not balanced. And in fact, that was one of the things that was – I wanted to talk about this just for a minute, because that was one of the major criticisms of Jesus the Cold Case, that I'd only chosen to speak to certain theologians about on that topic. And, you know, where was the balance? Well, the balance was that on any given day, you can go to another channel and hear the opposite view. I had 90 minutes and I was going to tell you this bit. Yes. Now, that's still okay for New Zealand Public Television. But we would have to make sure that somewhere else. So if you did a program that was, you know, quite controversial because you took what might be a minority point of view or something like that and you really pushed it, and it wasn't, and you only chose to speak to certain experts that fitted in with your viewpoint, we would have to make sure that somewhere on another channel there was the counter to that, Or we would have to run the counter to that.
Brilliant.
So that you'd listen to both sides.
Yes.
So we're not... it's not true to say that there are no editing gateways to go through, but they are legal. You can't defame people. You know, you shouldn't be able to do that anyway. Your argument has to, or if it's an argument, it has to be well thought out and well argued, and the science, or if it's a science thing, has to be peer reviewed and all of that. But apart from that, we're not going to say, because we don't have them, it doesn't quite fit with our sponsors, or it doesn't quite fit with the brand that we have. Well, our brand is independence. You know, if it fits with that, you know, we should have it.
Brian, are you saying this New Zealand Public Television is not going to have endless cooking shows and bachelor shows? I don't know if my brain could actually. So this is expecting intelligence. And anybody who's listening, if you want to see, have a look at Who Owns New Zealand Now, the documentary that is easy to source online. That is one in which Brian goes and talks to many different viewpoints and then incorporates them with research on the history and how we've come to where we are.
If you go to my Facebook page, you'll find it.
Yes, you know. And this is bringing passion and intelligence to the work that we all do, and that I think the audience is starved of now.
Well, I hope that people will respond to it, because if we don't hold on to life rafts like this, yeah, we're all going to drown. You know?
And we are. We are, through ignorance. And I think a lot of people have turned off television, mainstream television, because of this. I'll never forget a wonderful interview of Ian Fraser with Clive James. And Clive James made this one comment that struck me. It was at the beginning of my broadcasting career, and it really impacted. He said, "The tragedy of television is it's often made by highly intelligent people who despise the audience for whom they're making programs. You are the absolute contrast of that, and the people I quoted in the introduction as well. But we could have many young producers now saying, I'm going to talk up to my audience. Manaakitanga, speak up, respect my audience, treat them as highly intelligent people. All of them, all of us. Yeah, that's really where you want to go, partly, with this.
Well, you see, it's an interesting paradox, isn't it? Because public education has taught people to be not just take at face value things that are told to you and all of that, and yet we have a media that tries to manipulate people who are actually very intelligent. I'm always amazed at the wisdom that comes out of people who, you know, at face value you wouldn't think had that wisdom. I remember, for example, years ago, making a documentary called Stand By Your Man, which was about three women whose husbands or partners had committed major crimes, and what was it like for the family, and what was it like when the police came charging through your kitchen with your German Shepherd dogs and things looking for your partner. And I interviewed this woman called, I think her name was Liz, actually, but I could be wrong about that. And she was, you know, folding her nappies and talking about this. She fell in love with this guy when she went to prison one day, and she saw this lovely man across the room in the interview area with the family's meat. He had lovely puppy dog eyes, and I fell in love with him. And anyway, we got married, and we decided to live. I said he could come and live with me, when he was out, we lived for probably a couple of weeks. Then he stole my car. And next thing was, I got a call from the police in Invercargill saying it's, you know, they got a car and he was back in prison, and that was that. And then about I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks later, there was a knock. You know, there's a knock at the door, and it was him, and he'd escaped. And anyway, so we went on the run, and best sex we'd ever had. And on it goes like this, and you're going, oh, God, grief, what kind of person are, you know, where's this going? And then all of a sudden she says, do you know, it was like a university for him. He went in doing just fraud, and he came out doing grievous bodily harm. And they never fixed his drug and alcohol addiction, and that was his problem.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, you've listened to all of this and you're just about to dismiss this person as being the silliest person on the planet, and suddenly they come out with this absolute insightful gem about what we're not doing for men in prison or for women in prison. We're not addressing the issues that actually have ended them being up there. I wanted to do a program about recidivism. I can't remember the exact figure, but it's extremely high. I mean, it's something like you've got an 80%, like, don't quote me on this, but it's something like 80% chance if you're a male going back to prison. If you've been in prison before you're 20, you're going to have about 80% chance by the time you're 25 or something like that. I wanted to compare that to the recidivism rate in Norway, where it's 20%. Now, what are those guys doing that we're not? And why aren't we investigating that and thinking, why can't we apply it here? Those are the kind of programs I'd like to see people make to the, you know, that says, here's a problem. Why have we got to this problem? Who else has got an answer to this? That's why I went to Canada to find out, you know, what they know that we don't. And make those sorts of programs, because one of the ways that governments gain power over us and people in who control media, perhaps not the media so much, but I'm thinking about governments here. If you don't collect data, then you don't. You can anything like if you don't collect data on, for example, how much Chinese money is coming into the country, then you can pretend it isn't a problem. No one knows. It's anecdotal. You know, oh, it's just the Chinese. Oh, you're bashing the Chinese again. No, I'm saying, let's collect the data. You know, you're giving visas away to very wealthy people, you know, gold visas, basically. If you've got $10 million, you can buy a residency in our country. What are those people doing for our country? Where's that money going? I'm sorry, we don't know, because we don't follow the money trail.
It is so cynical, and it's been so widespread. It's in when I was doing work on the homeless problem last year, they're not collecting proper data on the homeless people, on the number who are out on the streets. It's just, if we don't know how big the problem is, we can just pretend it's not happening.
And one of the things that NZPTV can do is that independent producers can go and pick a topic.
Yes.
Go in and investigate it, find out, bring us the data. That, for example, the government isn't collecting because it's inconvenient. You don't want what the last thing that governments want is inconvenient truths. You know.
Yes, and that is across the board. I mean, getting back to ownership of property, to know the number of properties that are sitting idle and empty. Mm. We all know. I remember living opposite one. It was all shuttered and nobody was living in there. And we've got this chronic homelessness problem. So let's collate the number of absentee owners who are not committed to this country, and why are we giving away our ownership? There's huge issues there.
What happens then is that if you do your homework, if you do collect the data, then policy changes. Now, a good example of this is that...
I'll just stop you there. That is the people leading the politicians, and that is what's needed now, making the politicians more socially conscious, more aware, more intelligent in their choices, because we... the people are finally saying, we've had enough of you imposing the neoliberal agenda, actually.
No, but that's absolutely right. If you just have a look at what happened with Inside Child Poverty, for example, I made the program, and then the first reaction, because it was, and I didn't control going out in the week of the election in 2011, that was TV3's decision, and what a wonderful decision, I have to say. It was a marvellous decision.
And a wonderful program that I recommend people looking back at, because it doesn't date, Inside Child Poverty.
Well, what happened was... there was an argument about whether it should have been screened in the week of the election. Then there was arguments that went on for a couple of months, driven by right-wing media commentators like Sean Plunkett, who said, "This, you know, Brian Bruce should not get funded for programs like this. How dare? Where is the New Zealand money going into these programs like this?" And he, you know, anyway, then a marvellous thing happened. Then the national government said two things. It said, first of all, I was making it up. You know, left wing journo, they're making this stuff up. Then, well, it might exist, but you can't measure it. So that's not collecting data. We aren't collecting data because we're not going to measure it. So then a wonderful thing happened. The then Children's Commissioner, Russell Wills, said, okay, I'll get a group of academics together and we will measure this thing. And they put out this amazing report, you know. So then you couldn't ignore it anymore. And then the words child poverty became kind of part of our vernacular. And by the next election, it was an election issue. So this is what we can do as media people. We can investigate. We can collate data. We can inspire people. I was inspired to do the program by Child Poverty Action Group. I mean, I didn't invent the child poverty thing. I mean, I just came across this work that these people had been doing for years and thought, well, maybe I've got a few skills that I can actually explain this. And that's probably what I do, is I explain complicated things and try to make them understandable. But that was my role. And then people like the Children's Commissioner and that, they ran with it. You know, once the public was kind of going, hang on just a minute, because I think something like 580,000 people watched that program.
Which is huge ratings. That's up there with rugby, which shows there's a hunger for intelligent investigative programming.
Well, I offered it to TVNZ first, and I seem to remember somebody saying to me, who's going to watch a program with poverty in the title? So, but that's water under the bridge. I mean, the point is, the other thing is, any public broadcasters or any government-funded broadcasters or any private broadcasters out there who are listening to this small channel, they need to understand that New Zealand Public Television isn't competitive. One day they'll figure out that it's cooperative. We could make, for example, a program that is of great public interest, and we could make it in a dynamic way. We could take the online rights. They can have the broadcast rights. Now, that would be an adult way of dealing with different kinds of distribution. Will we get to there one day? Maybe we will.
That's a beautiful vision, and everybody would win. The program would rate on mainstream. Yeah. It's still free to air for people who want to look online. It's wonderful. A couple of things came out of what you were saying. Clearly, that whole idea of the program on poverty really does resonate with people. I think there is a spirit in Kiwis, as I said in my introduction, where we are deeply uncomfortable in this country with inequality. There is still a deep discomfort. There are those who are willing to look away, those who've made it and travel in their helicopters every day and jump into their Maseratis and think that's happiness. Many of them are not. And many don't realize the simplicity of, I don't know, I always think of the Dalai Lama, who says, if you want to be truly happy, give to others. It's a very simple idea, and it's an idea a lot of our parents, it's an idea my father fought for in World War II, when he said we came back to make sure that we had this free New Zealand where we all care about each other. These simple ideas, aren't they, at their core?
You are listening to Liz Gunn interviewing Brian Bruce, the New Zealand TV documentary maker. Introducing a new media platform for New Zealanders to learn and educate themselves.
It's no accident that one of the longest running programs in this country is called Fair Go.
Yes.
You know, deep down, most New Zealanders believe in the Fair Go. And we were terribly, many of us felt terribly betrayed by 1984 and the adoption of neoliberalism and getting told it was the only way we could go. Well, it wasn't the only way we could go. I mean, capitalism, there are about 30 different kinds of capitalism in the world. And if you look at what happened in Scandinavia, they took a deep breath before they adopt, and they have adopted elements of neoliberalism. But they didn't, they ring-fenced their children, they ring-fenced their elderly, they ring-fenced housing, and then they went, well, maybe we could be a bit more kind of, you know, entrepreneurial. But it wasn't kind of what we did, which was, all of that is wrong, and now this new evangelistic way is right, and there is only one way to do this. You only have to read Longy's own book, 10 years on, he realised that, in fact, this was the worst thing that he probably felt really, really bad about it, because I don't think he really understood it. I'm not sure that many of us understood it at the time. I certainly didn't. I did what everybody else was doing. I did one house up. I tried to. Then I sold it, and then I got a better house for my family. I thought I was working for my family. You know what I didn't think about, because I at the time was that 20 years down the track, other people's children would not be able to afford a house because of what I was doing. So, and what many of us were doing, we were just doing the best by our families, and we were encouraged to think that that's what you should do. And it's only in hindsight now, and it's a bit hard, you know, I sometimes hesitate to having this Masters of the Universe puppet-driven thing. I don't think it works like that. I think that, you know, even Douglas may have thought that he was doing the right thing. I've never spoken to him. I'd like to interview him one day. But the reality is that wasn't the right thing. It created huge inequality. When the Nats came in, National Party came in afterwards and created the mother of all budgets.
Under Bulger, who's trying to also be a bit of a recidivist and say, you know, I didn't really support it now after he supported it fully.
I think, and also saying, the one which goes, if others thought I did wrong, they could have changed it. You know, yes. That's interesting.
I wash my hands, Bulger's pilot.
But the Ruth Richardson mother of all budgets... Mm. That cut the benefits, all of the diseases of children related to poverty all skyrocketed. You know, the scabies, the chest infections, all of that. And that's nothing to be proud of. And that should have told anybody who had a social concern and pretended to have a social concern that there is something fundamentally wrong with this economic system that's creating this.
That beautiful idea that a society is only ever really as good as its weakest links. So that's where we see how good a society is in its operation. So these are, I've met many in their 20s who are saying, we don't like what the boomers have done. We don't like all the money making, money is king. If I have a lot of money, everyone else will look up to me. We don't look up to people who are like that and exploiting the planet and exploiting others. I feel there is a massive shift happening. I've got quite a young spirit. I think you have too, Brian. But I really relate to those in their 20s saying, I'm going to do it differently. A young friend who's starting up a hemp protein restaurant, hemp, you know, food, and it can feed so much of the planet without exploiting our land. Get the bloomin' dairy off our poor, tired country. But many of them with deep passion for something different.
I think you're onto something, because a couple of years ago, 2015, I think, the Quakers asked me to do their lecture for the year. I was a bit surprised because, you know, I wrote Jesus the Cold Case, and so, you know, anybody who's read that would realise that I'm not a Christian. But they responded to the social documentaries I was doing. And I thought, to be honest, that I had to give it once in Whanganui, you know. Turns out I ended up giving it in 17 different towns and cities around the country. In the major cities, what was really interesting, the university towns and cities, was that... half of the audience was about my age or older. You know, they'd grown up in socialist New Zealand. And the other half of the audience were, I would say, in their early 20s or younger. There was no one in the middle. Maybe they were all home looking after their kids or something. I don't know. But I sensed that there was a new wave of... And people were saying, young people were saying to me, what's socialism? I said, well, it's kind of where we all work together cooperatively to achieve the end. Hey, that's a pretty good idea. It's not about me, you know?
It's not about the might of the dollar either. Mm. And this is why Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn have had such following in the millennials.
Yes.
Let's look at the structure then for those young millennials thinking, well, I could make a program. I have got a good idea. Mm. You welcome anything from a 3 minute to a half hour.
It could be 1 minute.
It can be 1 minute.
If it's a brilliant 1 minute, it'll get on.
It'll get on. So let's look at the structure. It's free to sign up. First of all, you go on NZPTV,
nzptv.org.nz.
Advertisers, you're not having them? And what's the effect of that? What's going on there?
We're not going to have adverts in the conventional way of, you know, you get to part of the program and then you'll see an advert.
And you're also not having them all over the site?
No, not over the site. However,
it's a very clean site.
However, sponsors can sponsor programs.
Yes.
And they'd go through a process of there. And this is a bit like the PBS model.
Public broadcasting in America.
In America, where if you watch a public broadcast in America program, it will begin with... This program brought to you by the Ford Foundation. The
You've got a second career as a voiceover man, Brian.
The Brian Bruce Foundation for Better Broadcasting and people like you. And it always finishes with, and people like you.
Great.
And that's what has to happen. People like you have to give to this in order for it to happen. And yes, you can give to the trust, and we'll build up a fund of money that we is then contestable. Producers can contest for that fund of money. But we'll also, and we'll start soon, putting up programs and saying to people, do you want to fund this program on water?
Yes.
Do you want to fund this program on the TPPA? Here's what it is. Here's the producer. This is what we're going to make. And if we can get the money, this is what we would like to produce. And that's how some of that will happen. And then people will get credits. So if they want them, many people just want to be anonymous, you know. And other people want to say, look, I'm really concerned about this area of life, transport or water or something. I want to put up a large amount of money for that. Then they become a sponsor. They become a gold sponsor or a silver sponsor or what have you. And they get credit. They get a credit and they get thanked for that. But you know, we're also a bit careful. You know, we're not going to have McDonald's sponsoring a program on food, for example. You know, I mean, there's some ethics involved in this.
I love that.
And that's the problem you have. Currently, we have the problem at the moment is because we have to curate programs from around the web and from the copyright holders, and some of them are on YouTube. And of course, you're going to see ads, you know.
Yes.
And it's amazing. Amazes me sometimes how inappropriate the ads are. You know, that will happen. For example, you know, there might be a program on food labeling or something like that, and then in the middle of it will be this McDonald's thing, you
yes.
know. And that's kind of like, you know, oh, it's just, and that's just being done on the basis of how many eyeballs are there. And if you've got X thousand of eyeballs, then that kind of ad will come in here, you know.
But part of this is educating people too to be able to step back and go, why would they do that? Why do they want to, you know, put their name all over it? I remember having a big argument with Paul Holmes years ago saying, you've got to do a piece on McDonald's having a big sign on top of our Auckland hospital.
Mm.
What on earth are they doing that for? Why would they want that? They want to associate the name of, you know, this fast food that is creating a lot of obesity, and it's been well proven that, you know, with a health place, so that there's a muddling of the clarity of the lines.
You've just asked a really good question. Why would they do that? I hope that in all of our programs, I mean, like if it's a drama, you know, it would be nice to see dramas that tackle issues and you know, that people can talk about, you know, not just a drama just because it's a drama, you know, but you know, there was some issue involved here. And what I'd really like people to use New Zealand Public Television for is to actually ask those core questions that Socrates pissed everybody off with, you know.
Where, what, why, how?
Why are you doing that? Why would you be a general and go to war? And, you know, why are you doing that? And, what, you know, they killed him in the end, but, you know, but they are, you know, but he started philosophy. Philosophy is not a difficult thing. It's just asking, what is the core question here? Now, in Who Owns New Zealand Now, I started with that question, and I, like everybody else, looked at the home ownership thing. And it wasn't until I got into the program and developed it more that I realized that the core question that we should be asking ourselves is not how can everybody own a house, but how can we give people, everybody, security of tenure?
Yes.
And when you change the question, you get a whole lot of different answers. We can have leasing arrangements. We can have cooperative housing arrangements. We can have people getting together to have cooperative mortgages. We can do all of those sorts of things.
We can question the selling off of our country.
Absolutely. You can change. If you change the question sometimes, you get different answers.
Brilliant. Let's keep going. No government funding on NZPTV, as we addressed before.
Yeah, no, not for the station itself, or not for the channel itself. But I'm hoping, I will be pushing for, if we can get a large number of people involved in this channel, if a large number of people are watching it each week,
watching it, sharing it, talking about it,
independent producers should be able to then go to New Zealand On Air and say, I can get to 100,000 people on this program, and here are the analytics, and here's the statistics. That's why we ask people for information when they sign us, because we want to know, just some basic stuff about where you live and how old you are and that sort of thing, so that when producers go to New Zealand On Air and say, look, I can get to these people here, this age group 18 to 25, with the sex program or this sexually transmitted disease program or something like that, so that we can use the use the information. I'm waving my hands around here.
Sound effect.
We need that information. It's data again. We need that data, but for good purposes.
Yes. But that is really exciting. I think your numbers are far too small. I was thinking a million, as a starting point, because I really do feel, and this is not to flatter you, I really feel Kiwis are so hungry for this, and the potential of this. We have no idea yet what sort of programming Kiwis will come up with. What we do know is Kiwis are endlessly creative, very individualistic, really, in terms of thinking outside the box. Not individualistic in terms of caring for one another. We want to care for one another, but we have these wonderful, unique responses. This is going to be a place that can really go for it.
And we have two audiences.
With quality.
And we have two audiences. We have the audience at home.
Yes.
And the thing that's different about our channel is it has no borders. Commercial channels have borders. They have rights to programs that stop at the border. Now, when I said to TV3, why don't you open up Who Owns New Zealand Now to the world so that Kiwis living in other parts of the world can see it.
Yes.
They said, oh, we'd like to do that, but the commercials are in the middle of it now, and we can't broadcast the commercials to the rest of it. So they're cut, but they've got a problem with their own commercial model. Our programs can go to Kiwis on the other side of the planet. And right now, it's snowing in the UK. They're huddled up in their little bedsits in God knows where, and they can watch New Zealand programs on their computers and feel a touch of home, or be communicated, feel in touch with home. And I'm hoping that places like Invercargill, with their broadcast people there, the schools there, will make programs about Invercargill. Because if you come from Invercargill on the other side of the planet, you might want to see what's going on in your own hometown. You know, the only time we ever get to hear about Invercargill is if the oysters have come in, if there's something wrong with the aluminium plant, or Tim's done something stupid,
Yes. So there's a crime. That addresses another whole issue. The South Island has been starving for getting more coverage of what's going on there on mainstream here.
Something that's quite interesting is actually just looking, and we haven't got the analytics on this here because we've still got to put it all in, but just observing who is coming from where, it's really interesting that a lot of our viewership is actually outside the main centres. I think that Kiwis outside of Auckland and Wellington haven't seen themselves on the telly for a very long time.
I agree. And that's interesting. Let's just talk about that. You've been up for, about 2 or 3 weeks? It was a soft launch, as the jargon goes.
Ten days.
Well, it seems longer to me. It's lovely because I keep going on there every day and enjoying it. You've already had a cycle of programs, so you're shifting the programs wonderfully interesting ones. Let's have a look at some of the latest editions. The headings like popular demand, recommended, over to you, which is really input, coming soon. There are some pay to view with a wonderful documentary, How Far Is Heaven, which was in the festival, and I missed it a few years ago, and I really want to see that.
But can I just talk about that for a minute?
Yeah.
This is one of the ways that producers can benefit from, who have got good product, and what we ask them for is to give it to us for free for 7 days. And we put it up for free for 7 days. Then it goes down to the pay-per-view section. If you missed it, and so, Liz, if you tell me I saw this wonderful program on New Zealand Public Television, but I missed it, it'll be in pay-per-view. But that money goes to the producers. It doesn't come to New Zealand Public Television. It goes directly to the people who made the film.
That's terrific. And recommended at the moment, we've got New Zealand's Polluted Rivers documentary. We've got gorgeous John Clark, a docudrama, Passion in Paradise, and then a really interesting Al Jazeera piece, Locked Up Warriors. Mm-hmm. That, and I'm not going to go into the details of what they are. Again, Nikki Hager, who's had such difficulty getting traction in any mainstream media, and we only have to look into what he is doing, which is questioning the status quo, questioning governments, to know that there's been some pressure to keep him out. I mean, it's not hard to put two and two together. His Hit and Run documentary is on there. How are you sourcing some of these? Are you just going very widely and saying this is intelligent, it's challenging, it's mind opening?
Yeah, I do.
In terms of curation,
I try to look for a documentary. I try to look for a drama. I try to look for a music video. So I have categories, and I hunt for what I think is engaging material. And you know, I mean, right now I'm the content director. My intention is not to be the content director in a year, 18 months' time, as soon as we get this channel up and running. I think we need to keep changing the content director, because otherwise you get one person's view about what you should see. You get into that trap of editing what people will see. And the other thing we're going to do as a trust is we will develop this advisory board. And it sounds very grand. But the advisors have no power.
Yes.
The only power they have is the power to influence. And once every 3 months, the advisory board will have a Skype conversation with the CEO and the content director. They happen to be me at the moment, but this will change. To discuss how the channel is going and what programs we're seeing and what programs we're not seeing. And so if it is a people's channel, we have to listen to people and say,
Can you say that again? We have to what to people?
if it's a people's channel, we actually have to listen to people.
Could that ever spill over into democracy, do you think?
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? The problem isn't
cry at the same time.
Well,
there's been such a lack of listening in our media, in our leaders, this is going to take it back to an idea that people who are in positions of influence are answerable to the people.
The other thing that I hope it will do as we develop is to go back to an early idea of television. When television first came into our country, with one channel, I mean, you were just a child. I mean, probably not even born yet. But we would be on at something like 6 o'clock at night, and we're going off at 11 o'clock at night, and the Goodnight Kiwi would come on, and that sort of was one channel, and that was it to watch. Now, I can remember a program on the Sunday. I think Ian Johnston was in charge of it, but if he wasn't, he's a friend of mine. He'll allow me to a bit of liberal
name dropping.
Yeah, but certainly I think it was him that fronted it. And they would show you something like a 15-minute documentary, and the very nice front person will say it was Ian would say, "No, listeners, we are going to be tonight looking at the very thorny topic of abortion." Now I know that some of you will already be upset by this. But what I'm going to ask you to do is to watch this 15-minute program. Then in your homes and in your churches and in your schools, you ask you to have a discussion about it. And then after the 15 minutes, we're going to close down. And we'll be back in an hour.
Can you imagine? Wonderful. It does sound very Ian. You know, beautiful voice.
So they would go, they show the 15 minutes, you know, and then Ian would say, "We can close them down now." And the test pattern would come up, you know. And then, you know, an hour later, "Well, nice to be back." And I have a telegram from Nairi in Northland who says that her group think, it's cute, but the point is, we were using television in a way to communicate with each other.
Yes.
Now, we have the technology today to do that instantly with Periscope and with cell phones and all of that. And I want us to be a channel that does that, that allows us to communicate with each other on important issues and sometimes not so important issues, just to talk to each other. You know?
Wonderful. The kōrero idea, the idea of respect and conversation with respect and a sharing of ideas. That's deeply moving. The one program in my career in mainstream that I truly loved was The Funniest Vehicle, Good Morning. But we could take, it was the first year, but we could take calls. We could take faxes. And I used to say, let's have a town hall meeting on this. And again, getting back to that idea you said earlier, some of the contributions from Kiwis were so intelligent and so caring and so moving in that way. This can come back.
One of the things that you just talked about there is that you listen to people. One of the things that worries me a lot about what I see, particularly in times of political debate, is not listening.
Yes.
I have this question and I have this point of view and I'm going to cut you off. I'm sorry, you didn't actually get to the point there, but I'm going over here. And you don't get to hear, you don't get to listen to what the person actually had to say. And I noticed that there was particularly I don't know whether it was just me, but I seem to see that Jacinda Ardern got cut off a lot.
Yes.
That may be a male-female thing. I'm not sure. But it might also have been I, as a mediator, don't particularly like what you're saying, and so I'm going to get over here. You know?
And I erred on the side of that when I watched those debates. And speaking of debates, that's quite relevant because one of the things I'd love to see is by the time of our next election, I would love to see New Zealand public television as the go-to for New Zealanders who want to be informed, and we do, instead of these very superficial television debates. And as you say, many of us felt they were managed, manipulated could be another word, to have far more korero on the issues, and even in between election cycles to be able to feel this is a place to go to for political debate. Is that something that is
absolutely
doable?
I mean, that's one of the visions I have for 3 years from now, that we will be a go-to place for political opinion. I mean, you know, what did the Democrats for Social Credit actually stand for? Did anybody, you know, give time to them to say, now tell me about this monetary policy that you've got here, and then have a quiz about them? I took it on myself just to go and interview Gareth Morgan and also James Shaw. First of all, Gareth Morgan, because I had no idea what he was talking about. And yes, I thought, if I sit down with him, maybe I'll figure it out. And I found that Gareth had ideas that were that I could respond to, which was that he's quite right. We as many people are saying, we ought not to be able to just to accumulate wealth through property by sitting on our assets, you know. But on the other hand, his solution for that was one that I didn't agree with, which was that, you know, you should pay to live in your own house as you get older. I thought, that's not a vote winner, that one. You know, there are, and I put it to him. I said, why don't you do death duties, and why don't you do stamp duty, and why don't you do a number of these other things that actually be like, you know, capital gains tax and things like that? And he was stuck on this idea that, you know, you should, you know, I think he made the mistake, and I would say this to his face, that I said to him on the program, I said, I think you're judging everybody over the age of 65 from your own terms, that, you know, you're a wealthy person, you know. Some 65-year-olds, many 65-year-olds have worked hard all their life, haven't got a, you know, they may be asset rich. They may have a house that's gone up in value from nothing that they've done has done that, and now they've got no cash, you know. So you're saying, well, you know, we'll take the cash out of their house, and many of those people are going, but what am I going to, this is not how the world works, how do I leave this to my children?
And the discussion in mainstream was so superficial that many were left perplexed by Morgan. I totally agree, whereas there's room for a far more detailed questioning of these policies.
We need to have those conversations.
It's exciting. I could talk to you for another hour, but we do have to finish. I would say to everybody listening, please go online. The addresses, the contacts for it?
nzptv.org. .nz.
It's very simple. And Brian Bruce, also on Facebook, obviously, he has some very interesting programs lined up there that I've alluded to, and they're easy to find online. But Brian, you're one of the reasons that when I wanted to leave the whole media arena, I will say this right from my heart, you gave me hope that there is a better way, and there is a chance for those of us who want to use the media platforms to make a difference for a better New Zealand and a better world. You inspired in me that is something I could also do. So thank you for what you've given me personally, and all of us today in this interview, Brian Bruce.
That's kind of you. Thank you, Liz.
That was Liz Gunn interviewing Brian Bruce, documentary and media maker. I would like to make a special thank you for planetaudio.org.nz. This is the community radio station here in Auckland, which broadcasts in 46 different languages. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And or Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful Pohutukawa Christmas with your family and friends, and that 2018 dawns on us a new year of optimism, compassion, and some super positive change for our planet. I say kia kaha, haere rā, and aroha from nuclear-free New Zealand, Aotearoa. Thank you for tuning into this Green Planet radio show. I trust you have derived both enjoyment and insight as we empower ourselves with a greater understanding of the magnificent, multifaceted world that we inhabit.